Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, October 19th, 2023. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, we'll have interviews with two Pullman City Council at-large candidates, Eric Fedgerin and Holly Greystone. Pullman Mayor's candidates, Francis Benjamin and Deb McNeil, talk affordable housing at Forum. Top Montana government officials tell Yellowstone they don't like the three bison management plan options that they've made public. We'll have details on these stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Officials with Montana's Gianforte administration say they do not like the three bison management options Yellowstone National Park released in its draft environmental impact statement over the summer. The draft EIS includes Alternative 1, dubbed the No Action Alternative, that would keep Yellowstone bison populations between 3,500 and 5,000 after calving, and increase the number of bison wildlife agencies sent to tribes and continue to allow bison hunting outside the park to maintain population levels. Alternative 2 would keep the bison population between 3,500 and 6,000 after calving and focus on using a bison transfer program and tribal hunting to maintain the target numbers. Alternative 3 would keep the bison population above 3,500 and could allow more than 7,000 bison to exist. That alternative would allow more natural selection and hunting would help regulate the number of bison. Bison hunting is only allowed outside the park. According to the Idaho Capital Sun, Montana Governor Greg Gianforte, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Department Director Dustin Temple, and State Livestock Department Executive Director Mike Honeycutt submitted a 17-page critique of the draft environmental impact statement, saying the documents are substantially deficient and that the document misstates previous interagency bison management plan goals and past decisions by the interagency group. Gianforte, Temple, and Honeycutt wrote, "Yellowstone National Park's failure to work with the state has produced a draft environmental impact statement that picks the science it likes, fails to consider or reconcile relevant science critical of the alternatives, mischaracterizes other science, and revises administrative and procedural history to serve Yellowstone National Park's ends. Every alternative undermines and contradicts the statutes Yellowstone National Park is required to follow, as well as the goals of the Interagency Bison Management Plan. Even if the draft environmental impact statement met relevant statutory and regulatory requirements, it still fails to set forth or commit to a set of readily identifiable actions." The letter says the three Montana elected officials want to keep the Yellowstone bison population around 3,000. It says by allowing more bison, the park would be violating the National Environmental Policy Act and would be moving the goalposts. They say the draft EIS ignores research funded by the state of Montana that supports their position. Gianforte and his department directors say the three options are fatally premised on the presumption Montana would continue to allow two bison tolerance zones outside the park to exist. Montana authorized the tolerance zones in 2015, just north and west of the park. Yellowstone Park's draft EIS, which it issued over the summer, seeks to create a new plan, quote, that reflects changed conditions, new information, and consolidates various planning and environmental reviews from the past two decades. The new information is from a state of Montana assessment in 2015 and the new Custer-Gallatin National Forest Plan, which was approved in 2020, among other sources. Much of the debate concerns brucellosis, a disease which causes female cattle to abort their young. Although there are no documented cases of bison transmitting brucellosis to cattle, Montana wants to maintain its brucellosis-free status, which means it can export beef without inspections. Elk do have a record of transmitting brucellosis to cattle. Last winter was cold and snowy, and more bison traveled to lower elevations outside the park's boundaries. That caused tribal hunters to kill 1,100 bison, while state hunters killed another 75. Last winter, wildlife officials captured 282 Yellowstone bison for the Bison Conservation Transfer Program, which sends bison to tribes across the country after they are inspected for brucellosis, and another 99 bison were sent to slaughter. That may be the most bison removed from the park since the harsh 1996 to 1997 winter. In the summer of last year, the bison population in the park was approximately 6,000, up from 4,000 in 2012. Snake River Dam proponent Kurt Miller has announced he is leaving the Northwest River Partners for a similar job with the Northwest Public Power Association. Miller said the Northwest Public Power Association is a strong supporter of hydroelectric power, but he is unsure how active the group will be in the continuing debate over the existence of the four lower Snake River dams. Miller told the Lewiston Tribune, "I genuinely believe those dams are really important, and that is not going to change because I changed jobs. We definitely have the right elements in place for River Partners to continue to be an important voice in the region." Scientists believe the four lower Snake River dams are blocking salmon migration to the point where the salmon runs could cease to exist. The Northwest Public Power Association represents more than 150 public utility districts, electric cooperatives, and towns in Alaska, California, Colorado, Nevada, Utah, Wyoming, British Columbia, and the Pacific Northwest. Northwest River Partners have formed a committee to search for applicants for Miller's previous position as executive director with the group. And you're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
KRFP Community Radio is proudly supported by Ponderosa Rentals, providing quality home rentals since 2006.
The candidates for Pullman mayor referenced state mandates when asked about affordable housing at a Pullman League of Women Voters forum last night. The race pits City Councilmember Frances Benjamin against retired school teacher Deb McNeil. Candidate Frances Benjamin said the city should look at the option of allowing smaller lot sizes in some areas and also consider a land trust model. Benjamin also said the city needs to work with the state because state mandates are inhibiting affordable housing.
The Building Code Council is mandating certain things to be done on all buildings that are actually increasing the price. And so I'm trying to work with the Building Code Council, of which we have in Whitman County, one of the representatives that is on that Building Code Council, we're working with him to see how can we get the Building Code Council to take into consideration their recommendations, and they're not actually recommendations, their mandates as it relates to building, and take into consideration this affordable housing piece.
That was Pullman Mayor candidate Frances Benjamin. Benjamin said the city has recently done some work on the issue, including allowing smaller lot sizes and accessory dwelling units. Benjamin's opponent, Deb McNeil, asked whether there really is such a thing as affordable housing because prices and economic factors keep changing. McNeil says she has spoken with seniors during the campaign about their desire for more modest housing.
Seniors would love to take their older homes and sell them to entry-level families. And they're willing to take a cut from their price so that those families can have the same opportunity they had many, many years ago. I think the land trust model is something that needs to be looked at. And I think we need to work with the state and say, hey, you know, what works in King County might not work here. How can we take care of some of those differences and create the housing we need here for our citizens and those people who want to move into Pullman.
That was candidate for Pullman Mayor Deb McNeil. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox contributed to this report. You can listen to Cox's interviews with both candidates for Pullman Mayor by going to this week's Monday and Tuesday evening report programs on the KRFP website, where those interviews are archived. The winner of the mayor's race will replace Glenn Johnson, who has served as Pullman Mayor for 20 years. We now turn to our two interviews that KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox did with the two candidates running for the at-large position on the 7-seat Pullman City Council. They are Eric Fedgerin and Holly Greystone. The at-large city council seat is the single seat on the city council where all voters in Pullman can vote. The other six seats represent three different zones with two council member positions each. The first interview was with Eric Fedgerin, who, full disclosure, is a board member of Radio Free Moscow Incorporated.
You know, again, my name is Eric Fedgerin, and I've been a community member for about 15 years. Pullman has been my home for about 15 years. And you know, as a community member, I've had a lot of conversations about people's vision for Pullman, what their hopes and dreams are, and it is through these conversations that there seems to be a common theme that runs through all of them, and that there's this gap. There's a gap between us, what the people of Pullman want, and our elected, what the elected representatives are doing. And this gap that we're talking about tends to breed discontent, anger, frustration. We can see some of that during how the council navigated the tree issue, the infrastructure, downtown project, and stuff like that. There was a lot of people feeling like they're not heard. And so this is the gap that I'm talking about. And this campaign is about bridging that gap, and bridging that gap not with just promises of what we're going to do when we're going to get elected, but tangible actions that we are doing right now. And so a couple of these things that the campaign is doing right now is we have community-led advocacy panels. And so these advocacy panels have subject matter experts on them in the areas of low-income poverty, downtown Pullman, senior issues. And the purpose of these advocacy panels is to help keep me and the campaign informed about the important issues that Pullman is facing. We talked about this a little before we started recording, but I'm at WSU in the financial aid office full-time. I don't have the insight, the expertise that, say, you know, somebody who is a business owner or something like that. And so the purpose of these advocacy panels is to help us navigate and know about these important issues from the stakeholders. And in addition, these advocacy panels put on public forums. We had one about 2 weeks ago, focused on downtown Pullman and businesses, and that was led by Nick, who's the owner and chef operator of Black Cypress. And we invited the community to come in. Nick kind of gave his impression, his perspective on how the downtown Pullman project is going, and then his perspective as a business owner. And then we also invited the community to be a part of that conversation. We have one right now that's going to be happening today at 5:15. That's going to be around rail banking. And we have our local community expert, Rich Wesson, who's been working on this project for 20 plus years. And so campaign is about tangible actions that we're doing right now, not promises that we're going to do while we're elected. And one thing that I can promise my constituents is that I will continue to do these advocacy efforts even after I'm elected. So these community forums, advocacy panels are going to be a key component with how I conduct myself as on the Pullman City Council. So that's a little bit about what I bring to the table this election.
All right. What do you think the city can do to improve housing affordability?
Yeah, and this speaks really, housing affordability speaks, it's really close to my heart. I've been a renter my entire time in Pullman, and with the rising housing costs, costs associated with building a home, lack of housing, all those, you know, kind of share a pretty troublesome future regarding the housing market for Pullman. So there's a number of things that, you know, Pullman can do. Is one is we need to increase the supply. We had a recent housing report that said that we need over, I think it was 10,072 houses built by 2040. And that will be a large hill to climb if we want to make that metric. And then also, there is not a lot of room to build in Pullman. And so we definitely, what the city council can do is we can look at zoning, especially looking at more options for more high-density zoning and alternate housing. So we're doing, buildings that are in the same same location but separate from the main house. I'm totally blanking on the name of that right now. But small houses, tiny homes, right. Stuff like that, alternative to the normal housing. All these opportunities we'll need to explore in order to, you know, figure out this housing situation that we have in Pullman.
Yeah. There's a small housing development up near Military Hill, I believe, I forget how many units, but... your campaign manager was telling me about it, and it's affordable.
Yeah, we definitely want to make sure that, you know, future housing does fit within that 30%. If it's rentals, you know, we want folks to be able to afford that rent, and it needs to utilize less than 30% of their income. And it's a little hard to find places to rent that kind of fit that bill in Pullman.
What are your thoughts on the concept of inclusionary zoning, which requires developers to include a percent of development for low-income housing?
Yeah, that's a good question. I want to say that I'm probably not as abreast with that single issue, but, you know, sorry, what was it again?
It's a concept.
Yeah.
Inclusionary zoning.
Yeah.
So that we could protect our communities most vulnerable, those with disabilities, seniors on fixed incomes, and, you know, single mothers with children or young families with children are often at the lower economic development part. And so if we could secure housing for them, there's a concept of inclusionary zoning, and it's been successful in other areas, so.
No, thank you. I'm going to write that down and follow up on that. So that's different than, say, low-income housing. So from what I'm hearing is it's like a metric or a quota that is reserved for affordable housing just in the zones or the zoning areas in Pullman. Is that correct?
Yes. It mandates developers to develop and set aside development towards low-income housing. So those residents fit into being counted too.
Right. Yeah. One thing I did want to mention is that a couple years ago, I think this was pre-COVID, we had a really comprehensive housing assessment. I think it's the Palouse Regional Housing Assessment Guide that was made, and that was basically a blueprint on having to set Pullman up. Oh, well, you have that right there. Oh, cool. Yeah, this is what I'm talking about. And I have read that multiple times. And one of the main things is that there's no regional housing authority in the area. Mm-hmm. It seems like every municipal, city or town is kind of doing their own thing. There's no, regional housing authority that helps bring all the stakeholders to the table to really talk about how to create the long-term vision for housing on the Palouse. And so that's something that was highlighted in the Palouse Regional Needs Assessment, Housing Community Needs Assessment, that I would champion.
All right. Thank you. And what are your best ideas on providing community outreach in terms of communication between the citizens of Pullman and the city?
Yeah. I think that hits the nail right on the head for what this campaign is doing with our forums. Mm-hmm. These are, we're inviting the community to be part of the conversation in regards to downtown Pullman, senior issues, rail banking, And we cannot expect the community and our folks to show up at every city council meeting in order to be informed. It is our responsibility as a city to meet our constituents, our folks, where they are at. Folks are busy, especially when, you know, they're supporting money or they're supporting their families. You know, it's it's very, very hard to keep track of all the issues that are happening in Pullman, which is why, you know, as a community member, as a candidate, that we're utilizing these advocacy panels. And so in order to kind of bridge that gap that we're talking about, we will continue to have these advocacy panels as well as continue to host community forums for the community to come and be part of the conversation. We hope to have one on senior issues and low-income poverty issues before the election this year. So those are just a couple of ways that I will continue to bridge that gap between, you know, the people of Pullman and our elected representatives.
Okay. Do you have any ideas or thoughts on how the city can best increase transportation support for a bypass so we can reduce traffic and noise on Main Street?
Yeah, and the bypass is definitely something that goes beyond just Pullman. We have to include the legislature. And there needs to be a solid grassroots movement in order to get that, in order to make that happen. So we're going to have to call on every community member to be writing to our representatives that's in the 9th Legislative District as well as the 5th CD. And so for those who don't know, that's, you know, Kathy McMorris Rogers, who represents us in Congress. That's Joe Smick, Mary Dye, and Mark, I always mess up the last name, Schessler.
Yeah.
Schessler, I apologize for him. Yep. It's just that one, it gives me a hiccup every time. And so, you know, if they know that there is this wanting, and, you know, they listen, they want to reflect what their community and their constituents are saying. So I feel like we need to include, there needs to be a major grassroots effort in order to make that happen. But I definitely want a bypass to come in. I know there's been countless studies and then countless talk about bypass, but I feel like the key component is that is kind of a grassroots effort by the Pullman community in order to make that happen as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your time and sharing your thoughts and ideas with me, and we'll see you out there.
Yeah. For those who want to learn more about this campaign, you can contact us at ericforpullman.org or give us a reach out over email, and that's campaign@ericforpullman.org. Ballots come on, get mailed on October 20th. That's this Friday. Please vote early and tell your friends, because this election is just so important for the future of Pullman.
That was our interview with Eric Fedgerin, who is one of the two candidates running for the at-large seat on the 7-seat Pullman City Council, sometimes called Ward 6. Like the mayor's race, voters citywide can vote for candidates running for the at-large seat. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox did the interview. The other candidate running for the at-large seat is Holly Greystone. Here's our interview with her.
Well, I'm running for city council because I care. I care about the accessibility of our government, our sidewalks, our transportation, education. I care about good, clear communication. I've been hopping on that for a long time. I think we need better communication from our city government and vice versa. And I mean, communication will help us understand a lot more about the project, downtown Pullman. We'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later, but that's also a passion of mine as well, is improving our downtown. It's at the root of our communities, at the base of our community, and having a vibrant downtown is key for economic development and growth in our community here. So I'm running for city council because I care. I'm the kind of person that listens to the concerns, work with people to find answers to those concerns, and then push forward on that to find resolution. I'm a listen but also take action type person as well.
What do you think the city council can do to improve housing affordability? Our community is growing, mm-hmm. and across the nation, housing prices are skyrocketing and rents are through the roof. Mm-hmm. What can Pullman City Council do?
This is very dear to me as a person who grew up in low economic status myself. My mom couldn't afford a home. We lived in low-income apartments, and always at risk of possibly being thrown out because of how things were being ran at the time. And then trying to be a first-generation homeowner myself was very difficult. I ended up in a 600-square-foot house because that's what I could afford. But at the time, that was also cheaper than the rents here in the Pullman area. And the only reason I'm able to now is because I'm married and my mother-in-law lives with me. So it's really, really difficult for people who are hardworking and moving forward and trying to have a place to live, whether it's an apartment or a house. And this is a huge problem across the country. And we had talked at a previous discussion about inclusionary housing,
zoning,
where, and for those who don't know, that's where local governments use are trying to address affordable housing issues and promote more inclusive and equitable communities. And so some of the things that we're seeing that are successful with this program is places like Durham, North Carolina, Austin, Texas, Santa Monica, California, Fairfax County, Virginia. And this is where I would like to dive into, I know Pullman has done this, but a needs assessments of our community here. Look at what the legal requirements are, both at the state and local level, and then what can we do as an ordinance that encourages and incentivizes developers to consider offering, you know, we can consider offering incentives to the developers to encourage them to participate in this, from streamlining permits to waiving fees, things like that, so that they are encouraged to build homes that are more accessible to people. And then look at the target demographics and in terms of the incomes and where people are at and build within that range. So, developers need to make money. I totally get it. But also we need to have an accessible option for people. So there's a lot of things here that I would like to look at. Funding mechanisms, the education and outreach, look at our partners, who can we collaborate with, local nonprofits, housing agencies. And this is a fairly new thing that I just learned about from you when we did the League of Women Voter Candidate Forum. We had talked about this, and I've never heard of this term before regarding our housing crisis. And so this is a fascinating option among many, and I look forward to hearing what other things are out there that other people are seeing success and how that could be applied here in our community.
Yes, we did speak about inclusionary zoning, which requires developers to include a percentage of development for low-income housing, and it would secure housing for our most vulnerable populations, those with disabilities, seniors on people on fixed incomes, seniors, single-family households with children. So they are part of our community, and every voice matters here in Pullman. Everybody has a place, and we need a place for everybody.
We do.
So we need to secure some responsible options for our most vulnerable populations. That's why I asked about inclusionary zoning, what your position was on that, and affordable housing.
My wife and her late husband owned a number of rental properties, and they owned them outright, so they were able to keep the rent low as the rent in the area was going up for the same exact square footage and layout, essentially layout. But there's been like $2,000 a month on rent, but we were able to keep it at $800. And that covered our expenses and our taxes. Well, taxes have gone up. The requirement for insurance has gone up. And the laws in Washington State for residential renting have changed so much in the last 5 years. It's become impossible for smaller companies to own housing that we can rent at a low cost, because especially when you have these interest rates. So we had to make some shifts in that and invest in something a little bit differently, which is why we're now investing in a commercial property here in Pullman and revitalizing a historical building and creating more business storefronts so that we can add some more diversity in our downtown area.
Okay. What are your best ideas on providing community outreach in regards to communication, bridging the gap of communication between the city of Pullman and its citizens?
Improving our website, our city website, would be a great start. I know that there's been work on that in the recent, you know, couple years, but we could do more on having a more accessible website that's easier to find our information. And we used to have these block parties that are on our different hills. It'd be great to get those started up again and find champions. The other thing I would like to see, the College Hill Association is a great example of this, where they have a community-led organization up there. They're really addressing a lot of the concerns up there, from tree lighting to trash pickup service to sidewalks to crosswalk accessibility, and really just taking care of that community at large up there. And I think we can take that as a model and have that on all four hills. That also helps with that health safety component that we talked about at the League of Women Voters. Is it creates a sense of community, and sense of community creates safety. And you could do that through block parties or through an association of each of the different hills. And then you could have our city government interact with them and share information, and vice versa. Because then those associations can come as a single voice and say, hey, on Military Hill, our issue is our high schoolers don't have enough crosswalks to get to the high school. Or we have these, we have trees that aren't being trimmed back, and we can't see the stop signs, or we can't see the kids on the corners, or down here in downtown in our public parking lot. We have 6 out of 10 lights in our parking lot that are burnt out. Why? Who do we talk to? And having one person or one organization on each of those hills be the receiver of that, and then they bring it to the city, will help streamline communication back and forth.
All right. At the League of Women Voters candidate forum for city council, a question came up that not all of you,
yes.
Can we address this?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
I this is important to me, so yes, I'm assuming the question is regarding the Bridging the Gap
With indigenous communities in our area. What can we do? What are some ways Pullman can bridge the gap with indigenous communities, such as the Nimiipuu, Nez Perce? And you told me a story.
I did, yeah. So at that forum, and I meant it was, and this is very important, is that I'm a white woman. I'm not Native. I can never lay claim to that. I can never fully understand the impact that has happened to these people. And I said, I want to learn more. I want to know who I need to talk to. Where can I go to learn more? And at my, a private individual is hosting the candidates on Friday nights. The last one's this Friday, the 20th, October 20th. And this last Friday, I had this gal who heard me say, I want to know more. Give me the information. Come contact me. Here's my information. And they did. They showed up. Her name is Linda. She showed up, and she gave me the contact information. She gave me additional resources. It's going to take me for a community walk regarding some concerns that they have. And I know that Pat Wright mentioned this as well, but I'll mention it here as well. But Julian Matthews, who is a human resource director at the Nez Perce, and Dr. Zoe High Eagle Strong, Nez Perce Tribe as well, WSU College of Education. And so we know that those are solid sources of information. Linda gave me additional information on how I could become more aware. And that's what we need. All of us need that. We need events. We need awareness. We need to have partnership with programs, mm-hmm. Whether it's up at Gladys or it's in downtown or we have it on different hills, or we have these associations set up on the different hills that I mentioned earlier. If we had that in place, we can then bring these educational opportunities where we can learn more about this land that we are on and the people that this land belongs to. And education and awareness is huge. I'm somewhat aware. Having worked in the medical field for a number of years, I'm somewhat aware. Mm-hmm. But I am not a foremost expert on this at all. And I know that there's more that we can do. And like many of us said at that forum, nothing we do will ever be enough. But mm-hmm. something it needs to be done. And that's going to start with education. So I did a little bit of dive in this because it was very important to me. So going off the conversation with Linda, we talked about collaboration and partnerships between local indigenous communities, organizations, and our city government. Looking at bringing in consultants or getting indigenous representation in on our city planning and our decision making. Mm-hmm. So having them on the planning committees and have them on the downtown Pullman revitalization project. I don't know that we even talked to anybody in the indigenous people about the waterways that are in this area. Like, that would have been really awesome and great opportunity to add those aesthetics. And looking at that cultural preservation element, we do have some representation. I know the Pat Wright mentioned that we do have some individuals, but we could do more about that. Look at our city council currently. We're all white people. As far as I know, nobody has any indigenous blood going through them. And it's hard for anybody from that position to make a decision about another person, whether they're Chinese, Taiwan, Vietnamese, Korean. We know those individuals live in our community. They're part of our community, but we don't do enough to engage with them either. And I think we have a great opportunity to do that.
Yeah. Well, the Bangladeshi Student Yes. Association just had an event over at the U of I where they were featuring food and music and cultural so we could take part. Mm-hmm. And I know the Filipino community here at WSU is very active. And so anytime we see an opportunity to engage. Yes, that's what we have to do, mm-hmm. is step up to the plate and engage ourselves, put ourselves in that arena, mm-hmm. and learn about different cultures. I mean, we're here. There's an 8-mile stretch with two universities. Mm-hmm. So there's
that
a lot
idea
of...
like, well, that was my ancestors, or that wasn't me, or I wasn't... That's fine and all, but we still have a responsibility to show up, mm-hmm. and do right, mm-hmm. for ourselves, mm-hmm. now and for the future. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be education. That's going to be us going to those events, mm-hmm. and experiencing food and culture and the people and asking the hard questions. Mm-hmm. Like, what can I do to be a better advocate for your community? How can I help? Mm-hmm. And it's not a savior complex. It's not that. It's really about education and accepting that we don't have all the answers, but we can go and learn, and we could be a better person for that.
Well, thank you for your time, Holly.
Absolutely.
That was our interview with at-large Pullman City Council candidate Holly Greystone. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox conducted the interview. Previously in the newscast, you heard from the other candidate running for the at-large seat on the 7-seat Pullman City Council. That candidate is Eric Fedgerin. In Ward 3, Councilmember Pat Wright is facing a challenge from C.J. Robert. Our interviews with those two candidates are archived on the KRFP Evening Report section of the KRFP website. The two candidates for Pullman Mayor are retired teacher Deb McNeil and City Councilmember Francis Benjamin. The winner will replace Glenn Johnson, who is retiring after 20 years as mayor. You can hear our interviews with the two candidates for Pullman Mayor on the KRFP Evening Report section of the KRFP website. Listen to the Monday and Tuesday editions from this week. In Ward 1, current Councilmember Ann Parks is officially facing a challenge from local musician Dan Marr. Marr has informed the Pullman community he has withdrawn from the race, although he did not withdraw soon enough to have his name removed from the ballot. Incumbent City Councilmember Nathan Weller is running unopposed for re-election to one of the Ward 2 council seats on the ballot this year, which is for a 4-year term. Carla Marcella De Lira is running unopposed for the other Ward 2 seat, which is an uncompleted term seat. She will serve 2 years on the council before being up for election again. Councilmember Francis Benjamin, who is running for mayor, still has 2 years remaining in his term on the city council. Councilmember Megan Guido, representing Ward 3, has 2 years remaining in her term on the council. Small towns in Whitman County are looking to pass a host of levies in the November 7th mail-in elections. According to lists prepared by the Lewiston Tribune and on the Whitman County elections page, Albion residents will vote on a $20,000 levy for continued services for police, fire, and code enforcement. The levy would cost residents $36 per $100,000 assessed value. If passed, the City of Colton's special $30,000 levy would help finance general operations and improvements to streets, water, and sewer systems. The City of Endicott will ask residents for $10,000 for fire and emergency medical technician operations. Farmington residents are being asked to pass an $18,000 levy for street repairs, maintenance, and general improvements. La Crosse residents will vote on a levy on general improvements for schools, which will cost residents about $140 per $100,000 assessed value over the next 2 years. The city of Rosalia has a proposed $50,000 special tax levy for the city's street fund, equipment, and regular maintenance on the ballot. The city of St. John will ask residents to pass a special tax levy of $80,000 for streets, and the town of Tico will ask residents to pass a $50,000 levy for general street improvements. Whitman County Cemetery District 2 residents will be asked to pass a $110,000 levy for turf management, tree removal, safety improvements, equipment maintenance, water and sprinkler system, and Veterans Memorial and other beautification improvements. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area. Clear tonight, low 48. Increasing clouds, high 71 tomorrow. Mostly cloudy Friday night, low 46. And mostly sunny, high 71 on Saturday. 40% chance of rain after midnight Saturday night. Mostly cloudy, low 47. And rain likely on Sunday. 70% chance. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, high 61. Currently, we have 66 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. There you can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can also adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button. And also on the website, you can stream KRFP and listen to archived editions of every KRFP Evening Report and every show we broadcast in the last 2 weeks. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Flashpoints is up next. Appearing locally, where we feature music from artists that are playing in the Moscow-Pullman area in the near future, is coming up at 7:30, at 8 o'clock Maximum Rock and Roll. And the Academy's in 9 to 11 p.m. with Not Dark Yet. And we'll have syndicated recorded jam band concerts with The Ride, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. So stay tuned for more KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is brought to you in part by One World Cafe, specializing in craft coffee, fresh baked pastries, artisan sandwiches, weekend brunch, wine, beer, and cider on tap. One World Cafe has a web calendar for upcoming live events and a campus location in the Janssen Engineering Building.